North of Despair is a brand new album from Wood and Wire. We're going to talk to excellent banjo player with that excellent band, Trevor Smith. We'll talk about the album, talk about his banjo playing, how he got into playing banjo, which is often a mystery. He has a very good explanation. I really enjoyed this conversation, getting to know Trevor. You will too. He's from Wood and Wire. I'm happy to welcome Trevor Smith to Unreal Bluegrass. How you doing, Trevor?
Good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. I've enjoyed Wood and Wire's music for a while, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But the new album, North of Despair, is it on Blue Corn Music? Is that the?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, that's a label out of Houston, Texas.
Okay, good. North of Despair. And I don't know Tony. I know the band. I know a little bit about you now. I know of Billy Bright because of other things he's done and the mandolin work that he's done. But this is a great album. And I would clearly say there are hard driving. If people want to hear hard driving, up tempo things, there's some great songs that Tony has written that you guys put music to. But it's just a really fine album. And there's I think 11 tunes on it, but. But your banjo playing is just top. I mean, there's like Bobby Thompson runs in some of these things. And I'm not just saying seriously, you and Billy, and I said this before we started on the air that, and we'll talk about some of these songs, but you and Billy Bright on mandolin, there's kind of a constant conversation between you and Billy in a lot of these things, which I think is just really very tastefully done.
I appreciate you saying that. It's been a big, big addition to the band. He's been with us for like 4 years now, and that was a big part of going into this recording too. It's trying to tap into that because we do that a lot on stage, and so most of this album, me and Billy recorded our parts live in the same room.
Oh, good.
And so if we ever did do any overdubs, which we did very few. We tried to keep it as live as possible. We would have to go into the room together and overdub them together. So it kept that like organic communication going on.
There's a constant conversation between the both of you now, and that makes sense to me. That's a neat. So did you do that on purpose? Did you thought if we're going to do this, we have to be together and feed off?
I think the original idea was just for the sonic quality. You know, when you're in the bigger room and playing together and letting the instruments kind of mesh together in the room, it just creates a nice sound, and it sounds more natural and like you're in a room listening to it. I think it also did play into that. We feel comfortable playing together enough that if someone messes up, we're like, all right, let's just do it again.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that being in the room together, it could have been taking on a bigger challenge than we would have wanted to, but honestly, it felt really easy and effortless and natural.
Well, I mentioned to Trevor off the air for people listening, my introduction was sort of oblique to the band Wood and Wire because the first thing I knew was an album entitled Bright Monday, which was Alan Monday and Billy Brighton, and I had to go back and figure out who's this other guy. And as I was doing the process of doing that, I saw the band at Grey Fox the summer that Bright Monday came out because I remember that happening. So it was a happy coincidence for me to get to see you guys live back then.
And that was when he had just joined the band, so we were still kind of, getting the chemistry going with him. But now he's a full on member of the team now.
I'll tell you what it's the fourth song that I have, Summertime Rolls. Billy wrote it, but it's an absolute blistering instrumental, and it's a minute and 57 seconds of burning fire.
Yeah, it's like almost like a train 45 kind of thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good analogy.
And I feel like, another thing is he writes some pretty twisted, crazy songs, and I do too. And I think we just felt that having songs that had, as far as the instrumentals go, the songs of ours that are more of a throwback to the old school sort of breakdowns and stuff, that just seemed to fit the flow of the album more. So that's why we did that song, and then the song of mine on
Wingding.
There, Wingding.
Yeah.
That's like the closest thing to a banjo tune I've ever written. I was super stoked to put it on there and happy the guys wanted to do it.
And that's also very upbeat. It's also very up-tempo. I'll say not upbeat, but I mean,
it
moves along quickly. And it's interesting to talk about those two tunes, Trevor, because some of the songs that, and everything I hear on here, is generated by the band. There's one tune that I think comes from outside the band. Is that the Texas song that's not written by a member of the band?
Yeah, it was a co-write between Dominic, our bass player, and a friend of his, Robin Bernard, who's a songwriter in Nashville.
What I like about those tunes and Texas, and there's a lot of up tempo. I mean, you start off right away with Kingpin, but I like your playing behind the song when you're not just doing the Wingding or the Summertime Rolls. You're very comfortable in supporting the vocals, which Tony has a fantastic voice and writes great songs, and you're very comfortable, and you're not doing the normal banjo backup. They're not bluegrass tunes, but tell me a little bit about where you got that style from, where you're just very comfortably playing around what's happening on the melody with the lyrics.
Yeah, well, I spent probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 years mainly backing up various singer-songwriters, but just playing banjo. And that kind of forced me to approach playing in a very different way, where a lot of times I would sort of just pretend, what if this was an electric guitar with unlimited sustain? What would I do? And so that's kind of how I started to develop that approach, the more of a sympathetic approach. But other than that, I'm also really a big fan of the Grateful Dead, which in my mind, they're one of the best bands of all time at achieving that, making the music feel alive.
Yeah.
And I think the way you do that is without really having any specific role. Someone could be soloing, but it doesn't really have to be soloing. It could be sort of a focal point with a bunch of other things helping prop it up.
Oh, this is good to know. This is good stuff. You when you say a specific role, you're not talking about a banjo role so much as
Totally. Well, you did clarify that.
Yeah, but you did use a term, and I know what you're talking about, and many of the people in the audience will know, but you talked about, imagine my banjo had the sustain of an electric guitar. Tell me a little bit about what the distinction you're making there with that word.
So typically in a bluegrass setting, you would be playing like constant notes all the time because the banjo has basically no sustain. But I just tried to pretend like, well, what if that wasn't the case? And now I could play more sparse ideas, more melodic or harmonic ideas to support a vocal line or something like that. If that helps.
No, it does. It does. And it does. You're saying exactly what I wanted. And by not having sustain, banjo players and other people that watch and listen to them will talk about the term of note decay, that how quickly things decay off of a banjo. And although it's very bright, there's a little bit of control as to where you play close to the bridge or away. So on some of the things where you're doing really nice, tasty backup, are you further away from the bridge? Do you know where your hand is?
You know, that it really depends. I think that's another thing that is probably my favorite part of the banjo is how dramatic the tone changes depending on where your hand is placed. And I'm a real big fan of a lot of spectral music and music that uses timbre as an equal weighted value to harmony and melody. And so honestly, I could do it different every time. It really depends on sort of what I think. You know, sometimes you can play soft and close to the bridge behind a vocal part. It's just going to have a different timbre, different spectral element.
Yeah, this is neat. This is good stuff to me. We could talk about these bits of banjo knowledge that you have that I don't have forever. But let's talk about the album then, putting this album together. And you've been with the band for a while, so... So talk about we don't have to talk about every song, but I tell you this, everybody thinks there's a bluegrass tune about Eliza or Eliza. The one on this one is not that one.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, that's an interesting tune, and that is kind of one of our, you know, more ripping, fast, bluegrass, barn burner, upbeat songs. Mm-hmm. That one's really, it was just, we were driving down the road in East Texas, and we saw this woman who looked to be about, I don't know, in her 80s maybe, and she was just hauling a wheelbarrow full of rocks and in the heat, in the Texas heat, and just looked completely unscathed, and we were just kind of awestruck by that, the power of that woman, and just the power of, kind of represents the power of the women in it that mean a lot to us in our lives, too.
And she became Eliza in your mind.
Exactly. Then we just gave her a name.
And gave her a name. You didn't stop and say, ma'am, we need your name because we want to write a song about an 80-year-old woman hauling rocks. You just named her
Eliza.
Who knows
how she would have felt about that?
I know she might have said, what part do I get? Do I get a cut of it?
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, it starts off with Kingpin. You guys have – talk about the band a little bit. You know, as we've talked a little bit, there are definite easily recognized I don't want to say average, but a casual bluegrass fan would recognize several of these tunes as definitely right down the bluegrass. With some of the instrumentation is a little different. Some of your playing, it gets a little involved, but the drive and the instruments used, but a lot of the music from Wood and Wire could just as easily be described otherwise. I'm not a big fan of labels, but some of these, like the tune Texas we were talking about, that's just a beautiful song. And Tony has such a great, versatile voice and very recognizable tune. But...
Well, and that's actually Dominic singing that on that one.
Oh, is it really? Okay, well then.
Yeah. I think that's the only one Dominic sings lead on that.
Okay,
album.
All right. Good to know.
But
that.
I agree. I do agree that Tony has a very versatile voice.
He does, and I would never say this to, hey, you sound just like this person, because I think that's insulting, but I think it's the quality of his voice.
Sure.
There's a singer that I think has, I've never heard him not hit a note. I've never heard him not hit the range. Tone that he wants is Tim O'Brien.
Yeah.
I mean, he's an unbelievable singer of any kind of blues, hip hop, whatever he wants to sing. And Tony's voice strikes me not sounding like Tim, but being that versatile.
You're not the first person to compare him. And also that ability to hit the note. Tony has that, and that's just something that, I mean, I don't know. I'm definitely nowhere near being able to do that as a singer. But, I mean, on this album, I don't even know if we used any auto-tune at all.
Really?
And that's just a testament to Tony's ability to get in there and just nail it. It's pretty remarkable.
He's got it. Well, and Dominic's got a great voice, too. I didn't mean to slight him on that, but the
vocals.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
And here's the point, too, Trevor. The vocals aren't that... they are not what anybody would think would be a normal bluegrass vocal, because they're just not that high lonesome sound, which is not a lot of people do that anymore, but your vocals are not in that style, although you're playing.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because I think you could say that about just the overall voice of the band too.
Yes.
But the thing, the main thing that we all have very different musical tastes and, really, the thing that we all see eye to eye on and agree on, and what pulls us together, is just traditional bluegrass, you know. And most of what we listen to in the band is Ralph Stanley, and that's just that's where we get most of our collective influence. And obviously, we all have influences throughout our life that have shaped who we are individually, which I think just naturally makes it sound like. Not bluegrass, but the thing that we all love the most is bluegrass, and is, you know, Ralph Stanley is one example, and Bill Monroe, you know, just the classics. Those are the people that we really feel like they touched on to something, which is why this whole genre exists, and it's kind of hard to beat. I guess we're all here trying. We're not trying to beat it.
No,
we're trying to like. Exist in that ecosystem.
Well, a couple of things. You can't recreate Ralph Stanley.
You
can do a mimic, but you don't want to do that. But you get that, you absorb that, and it comes out as Wood and Wire. I'll tell you, I just did a show with a really nice guy, David Davis, the Warrior River Boys in Alabama, and he had a quote inside the liner notes that the future's in the roots.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking, it's a simple statement. I kept thinking about it. I said, that's exactly it. You got to go back and absorb that, and then you do what you want with it. And you're not going to be Ralph or Stanley Brothers or Flatt and Scruggs or the Osborne Brothers.
Sure, sure.
But I didn't. That's interesting. You guys listen to that kind of music as you're traveling around, and
yeah,
it's like you're retouching it.
I also feel like it's like there's something so transcendent about, and you know, obviously, and there's tons of people that are doing that now. Just certain people that really accomplish something and put their stamp on the music in such a way that as you get older, you revisit it and you experience it in a totally different way. Like for me, when I listen to Bill Monroe now, he's like the most psychedelic musician I've ever heard. And I never thought of him that way when I was younger.
I'm going to have to ask you. I need you to explain that, Trevor. I need to explain Bill and psychedelic in the same sentence. Go.
Just listen to some of his solos. Listen to some of those recordings where he'll go off into space. And
okay.
It's like, it's profound.
I've never, of all the people that have been on the program, I've never heard Bill Monroe and psychedelic in the same breath.
We all believe, we talk about it a lot. We believe that he was like the first psychedelic musician.
I get where you're coming from. I've just never heard it expressed like that.
Yeah,
so.
For sure.
That's great.
He just had a very free way of playing. And I guess that's what that,
well,
what
I guess he felt like there was no constraint because he was kind of creating, you know, melding all those other things together. But who was going to tell Bill Monroe he wasn't playing the right kind of bluegrass?
Exactly.
Because at the time he was.
Yeah.
So he had all that freedom.
Totally.
That's cool.
And I feel like that's, to me, that should be an element. And that, to me, that's what it is, like an element of the spirit of the music of bluegrass. You know, he was the creator, but he was creating it through having the freedom to be able to do so, and I feel like I definitely try and allow myself the freedom to,
oh yeah,
do what I want to do with it.
No, you're playing and the band's playing as a whole. You're always respectful to the tune or the song and the singing. If the lyrics are there and there's a vocal, everybody is supportive of that. But you definitely have a sound that you're respecting the sound of the band, and you don't hear these breaks that make no sense within the context of what Wooden Wire would do with a particular song. I actually think I think you guys have a recognizable sound, having seen you live, and then this new album, North of Despair. I think you have a recognizable sound, and I think that I just neat that you have those influences. Well, let me ask you this, Trevor. We bounced around about the album North of Despair, but now I want to know. What got you into playing banjo? You told me you played for 4 or 5 years playing behind people, but what was it that got, since we're talking about Bill Monroe, what got you into banjo playing?
Sure. I grew up playing classical piano, and I always had a passion for music. And then when I was like 13, my parents kind of had to drag me to a bluegrass festival. And the second I heard a bluegrass band and heard the banjo, I was just like, that's it. I got to do that. I got to figure out what that is, this mystical instrument and how it functions. That was pretty much it. I almost overnight, I didn't overnight abandon the piano, but I quickly shifted to just only banjo. And by the time I was probably 15, I was playing gigs for money. So it just, I kind of felt right away like, this is what I'm going to do.
And your parents who had had all these piano lessons for you in classical piano, they were totally cool with, let's chuck the piano and get him a 5-string.
Yeah, it's funny because my parents, they're
great.
Huge bluegrass fans.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And they're huge Grateful Dead fans. And like, they got me into piano just to give me something to try out.
The music, a bass, yeah.
Yeah, and I, you know, it worked for me for those development years, and sure, it would have been a way to go, but that's also a crazy competitive career path too.
And now, as we talked, you're able to play the B3 Hammond organ on one of the songs, so you still have your keyboard facility.
I had to muster up some of that hidden dexterity that I don't have anymore.
That's great. That's a great story. Who was the band that you saw when your parents drug you to this concert? Do you remember?
So I can't remember exactly which band it was. I think it was maybe the Cherry Homes. They were playing. It was either them or the Grasshoppers. I don't know if you remember the Grasshoppers.
Mm-hmm.
But those were the bands that I remember from that day.
I think that's a great story that you're. So why were your, when you say your parents were bluegrass fans, and Grateful Dead fans, what was their, if you're in the house playing classical piano, what are they playing on the CD or record player?
Oh yeah, they were on the stereo. They were mostly listening to like Dick's Picks, you know, and Rolling Stones and stuff like that. But yeah, I was actually really into the classical world. I got really deep into it, and I still have a passion for that world. But I guess at a point it just didn't have the same excitement as once was turned on the bluegrass. Another thing that really got me hooked on bluegrass was I went to that festival. My parents bought me a banjo that day.
No kidding.
I obsessed over it. And then like in Arizona, especially at the time, I don't know if it's still this way, there was like a period of 6 months where there was basically a bluegrass festival every weekend. And so it might have been the next weekend or the weekend after that I went to another festival, knew a few songs, and went and jammed with people. And I was really amazed that I could jam with people who basically didn't know any of the notes they were playing. That just blew my mind that they could play so well and not have to know all this musical information. And to me, that was just like, okay, if there's something more to music than just notes on a page.
What's on the page, I was going to say there, yeah. Most of those people are not, surprisingly, many of them can write note music, but a lot of them don't at all. And so you're all of a sudden leaping off of the page. And you're, so how did you learn to play in a couple of weeks? Who taught you what the basic approach?
Well, I just bought one of those How to Teach Yourself Banjo books. And okay. Every day when I'd get home from school, I'd just play rolls like for hours and
yep.
Just practice, you know. And then I think it was that next festival that I met, who is now the five-time state banjo champion of Arizona, a guy named Rudy Cortez. And he became my teacher, and he taught me I still consider him my teacher whenever we get together and share ideas.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story. Trevor, if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Trevor Smith of Wooden Wire. And we've touched on North of Despair, but then I also like to do these little, and I'm not going to, I know you're getting ready to do a sound check, and you're probably near a stage from the noise in the background.
Yeah.
So we talked about North of Despair and some of the, not a breakdown of every song, and that's not really necessary. I think we've gotten the feel of the band, and now we know more about you. And I just think it's fascinating. The whole story of how you got there is just a neat thing. So well, let's talk then about Wooden Wire. You're appearing someplace tonight, I guess, if you're doing a sound check. So.
Well, and this is actually not with Wooden Wire.
Okay.
I'm playing with a Grateful Dead bluegrass cover band tonight.
Okay. All right. Good enough. Well, so if people want to find Wooden Wire, where they're going to be, do you have a website, I assume?
Yeah, woodenwireband.com. And you can look up on any social media outlet, Wooden Wire Band. We have a pretty busy summer going through Kansas and Colorado and Tennessee. We'll be kind of all over this summer.
How far south and east? Well, you probably don't know that things are booked out and things change. But are you going to be anywhere near Raleigh during the IBMA week? Do you know?
We'll be in Raleigh the whole week of IBMA.
Oh, okay, I should be there. I'm on the board.
Awesome.
I think I'll still be there, so I'll find you somewhere down there as I'm roaming around.
Absolutely,
so.
Yeah.
Great, and then the albums are available on the website.
That's correct, yeah.
And you told me how many albums, I think before we went on the air, you were telling me how many, this is the third or fourth?
Yeah, this is the third studio album.
Okay.
And then we also have a live album, too.
Now, is that something people would buy and download? Is that something they would buy to download, or is it a physical thing?
It's a physical, you can get a physical copy,
oh, okay.
or everything's available on all the streaming outlets, too.
You guys are a fairly young band, in my opinion. Do you, and social media, and you're hip on that, and downloads, and if you're into the Grateful Dead, you know, digital copies of everything, and you must
yeah.
be really up on that type of a way to get your music out, because anymore, you're not going to find Wooden Wire in a record store, if you could find a record store, or even a store that had records, so you must have to really push yourself.
There are some out there, and we try and get ours in there in the kind of, it's interesting because record stores are sort of boutique now, but
yeah,
but I'm definitely a fan of that, and we try and make sure that it, if we can get our copies to those, but that's not where you're going to find it most likely.
No, well, I'm sure you sell them at jobs and gigs and stuff that you're out.
Yeah.
Okay.
At the shows and mostly, you know, most people consume it through streaming services, and I'm happy as long as people are listening and enjoying it. That's ultimately what we want.
Well, I think then I'll have a chance to see you guys again later this year in Raleigh. That'll be fun. And I'll catch you down there somewhere.
I'll be looking out for you.
I'll be bopping around. I appreciate your time. I know you're busy, and just finishing up here chatting with Trevor Smith of Wooden Wire. And we talked about, I think, enough about North of Despair so that the people know what the album's about and a little more about what the band is about. So I think that worked out well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, man, go do your job, do your sound check, and do your thing, and then I'll catch you down the road somewhere.
Sounds great.
Thanks,
Trevor. Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, man. Bye.
Bye.